Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stash Zielkowski.
Today is Monday, May 30th, 2022. And our theme today is Wicked Men and Demon Woman.
How?
You like that?
Yes, very much. I like that very much. And today is 28 weeks since Terry and I moved to Martinsburg, West Virginia.
All right.
How about that?
Yeah.
I know you like me to throw in a number thing now and then, so.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you to Andy Offit-Urban for introducing our show, as he does every week with his original composition, Terry Here.
Yes.
How was your weekend, Stash?
Oh, my weekend was interesting. Very interesting. We did some interesting things. I'm using the word interesting and I'm thinking, why did I say that?
Yeah, it's probably true.
Yeah. Well, we went to the Blue and White Diner yesterday. We went to the library yesterday, then we went to the Blue and White Diner, which we have driven past a couple times. And it's been around since 1941. And so since I've been around since 1941, we thought that might be a nice thing to go and see because it's been in the same family since then. It was small, not terribly small, but small and crowded. people in and out. And only two ladies working the counter and the tables. And, but the food was good, service was good, and we had a nice time.
I think I've eaten there.
Oh, really?
Many years ago, yeah.
Yeah, we like diners. Usually you can count on the food, you know, might not be something exotic, but it'll be cooked properly, good coffee, you know. And so and that's what we look for. So it'll take us a while since we've only been here for 28 weeks. It'll take us a while to figure out all the best places. But
yeah,
there's a Martinsburg. I think it's a diner up just a half a mile from us up at the on Foxcroft. And that's really nice. You know, it's just a regular place, but it's really nice. And they have very interesting wait staff. And I'm not sure why. I'm using the word interesting a lot here, but the wait staff there I've noticed they talk to each other as they're going by each other to the tables. And there are a lot of tables in that diner. And it's interesting to hear people, usually people that are waiters or waitresses are a little bit quieter with their conversations to each other as they're passing each other. But there was one lady and two men who just spoke up to each other. And it wasn't offensive or irritating or anything. It was informative. It was kind of like having a radio go by you, you know. Yeah, that's what happened on Saturday. I know. it was very nice. And we're having a good time. We sat out on our deck in the back for quite a while yesterday, more than once. Came in and went out and we also did something kind of historic yesterday. We we turned on our air conditioner because it got hot. And it was interesting, and it worked really well, which was great, because we tested it about a week ago, and it didn't work. So we placed a call to California, and Steve called somebody locally. Steve is the man who owns this house. And the guy showed up, and he and the helper investigated the whole thing, and he found the loose wire, fixed it. And then he told us we needed to change our filters. So I had to go get some filters at Lowe's. And then there were these one filter that was a monster filter. It looked like it was big. It was like a small suitcase in the main body of the stuff down in the basement. And Terry said, he said he had filters here. So I looked around the basement. I couldn't see anything looked like filters. And just as I was ready to quit my search, I noticed a large cardboard box sitting against the wall. And I thought, wow, that could have filters in it if he had like three or four of them, because they're big. I walked over and looked at it. Sure enough, there they were. So I didn't have to go to the store. I didn't have to order any online or anything. And the final part of that adventure was I had to figure out which way the airflow was. So I looked, good old internet. I looked on the internet and said, take a piece of paper, something like toilet tissue or Kleenex, and tear a strip, open up that, you know, where you're going to check the air, whether, you know, air is going to go one way or the other through that system. Open that up, turn it on, turn the fan on, and stick that paper in. And sure enough, they flowed to the left. That was great, because you have to put the filter in the right way. And I had been cautioned by the man who came and did the repair that when we get a new filter, make sure you put it in the right way, because if you put it in backwards, it can cause you problems.
And you have enough problems, you don't need more.
Oh, I know. And every place I looked said, the arrow on the filter will show you to make sure you put it in with the arrow pointing in the same direction as the airflow. It said that every place. The trouble is, it didn't tell you with which there were hundreds of pictures of different air conditioning units. You know, it didn't, not in none of them did it say the airflow goes this way. So, but they did give you this little, and I guess that was just to make it interesting. You know, they told you how to figure out the airflow. So,
good story. Yeah. Well, I spent yesterday in Baltimore, and I was expecting it to be really hot. I took all of these things with me to tell stories to cool down in case it was really hot and we were in the sun. But it was a gorgeous day. It was really, really nice. It was just warm enough to be comfortable. And we were in the shade the entire time. So that was wonderful. I was at African Liberation Day at Lafayette Park Square, which is a lovely little park. Almost surrounded by churches, some of which were broadcasting their services out into the community as wow. We arrived. But we told stories to about 30 children and gave away stuff. I gave away worms and black-eyed pea seeds for planting. Wow. And I have never met such a charming, bright, curious, and friendly bunch of kids. They were really wonderful. The youngest was 2, probably, and the oldest was in high school. Wow. And they were just
any adults?
A lot of fun. Oh yeah, tons of adults. And and their parents initially parked their kids with us, which was kind of the instructions they had been given by Grandmother Edna Williams, who was organizing our participation. She was the lead storyteller, the queen storyteller. And she had instructed the parents just to drop their kids off, sign them in at our tent, at our little canopy. And most of them did that, but then many of them came back to listen to the stories and see what their kids were up to. And there were activities. There was a chess set with pieces this big around,
right.
that the kids cool. played with, and a bunch of games. And mostly it was storytelling. And a woman who runs a group called Liberation Through Reading, a literacy group at one of the community centers nearby, brought in this pile of children's books that were just excellent books, and the kids had a wonderful time with those too. So I had a great time. I was exhausted by the time I got home.
Did you tell stories?
Yeah.
A long time?
We got there at about a little after noon, and we didn't actually start telling stories till about 2. But we were setting up and waiting, hanging around waiting in the meantime. Oh, and there was a really, really good set of drummers who, there was a libation to open the day with blessings from the ancestors to the ancestors and honoring the community. And then there was drumming, and we danced, and that was wonderful. That was about 20 minutes worth of dancing, and then we started with the kids, and Grandmother Edna moved through the park gathering children. So when she came back to the storytelling canopy, she was leading and being followed by a whole passel of kids like the Pied Piper. It was really funny watching her move through. And she was in full regalia, her African garb and headdress.
So you sparked the question. Did Jose go?
No, he did not.
I was trying to picture you and Jose dancing to African drums.
No, I was there with another storyteller named Patricia Smart from Hagerstown. And that was our first... Wow. That was our longest conversation. We've met several times, and we've had lots of conversations, but none more than about 15 minutes. So this time we were in the car an hour.
She lives in Hagerstown?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I talked about you, Stosh, when because she's interested in telling in schools locally. She was a librarian before she retired.
Wow.
And has told a lot to adults and is working now with kids and wants to tell in schools. And so I told her you were a good person to talk to about that.
Oh, well, that's nice. Good. She can fill the little space I left.
You left a hole. We miss you already.
Well,
why don't you talk about Speak, since we're...
Speak story series. I'm telling you, coming up June 14th. And Speak has been set up earlier this year so that we would have a Tuesday and a Wednesday performance every month on the second Tuesday and then the next day. And the Tuesday performance would be in person and on Zoom. And then the Wednesday performance would be only in person. However, it was set up so that the storytellers and the organization, the Speak Story Series, and and our executive director, Adam Booth, they could collaborate and they could decide whether they were going to do two performances or one and all this other stuff. So Bobby Norfolk is coming on June 14th, and he will only be doing one performance, and that'll be on Tuesday, and that will not even be in person. That will be on Zoom. So it'll be kind of a step back like it was for the last 18 months or so. Where we're on Zoom. And I'm not sure what the reason for that is, but anyway, it'll be a great performance. Bobby Norfolk has been a recipient of the National Storytelling Network Circle of Excellence Award, been telling stories for 40 years, was a National Park Ranger at the Gateway Arch in St. Louis. And today he's an author, actor, and comedian known for high energy performances. I met him 10 years ago in Arkansas when I hired him to perform at the festival I started and ran there. And he was a wonderful house guest, a very quiet house guest, but we had a couple of really good conversations. And also I took him to school for performance besides his performance on the weekend in the tents. And he was wonderful. The kids just loved him. He was this really quiet human being who once he was in front of the kids and smiled and began, he was a riot. He was just really, really, really funny with the children. And in a performance in the tents, he was terrific at many levels, serious as well as comic. So
I've heard him telling for adults, and he is very interesting and engaging teller. I really enjoy his performance.
So, and then following that, Sheila K. Adams will be here in July. And as it stands now, she'll be doing two programs, July 12th, Zoom and in person, and then July 13th, just in person.
So another engaging storyteller.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I've seen her a number of times. So a couple of times. I say a number of times. Sounds like I've been doing things for years and years and years and years. But I've only been to the National Storytelling Festival 12 times. And there are many people who've been there
40 since the times. Beginning.
Since the beginning. And next year, we're going to have Connie Reagan Blake, who is the only person who has been to every one of those since the very first one and told it at every one. So,
right.
Or MC or whatever. And anyway, and she's one of my favorites.
Well, how about if I tell a story?
I think that'd be wonderful.
This story is from the Marshall Islands in the far Pacific.
Yeah.
Iraji Lokokolok lived on Iban Island with his wife. So many people lived on the island, there was hardly any grass on the ground. When his wife became pregnant, all the people gathered to congratulate them. Iraji Lokokolok announced his intent to go traveling island to island looking for wondrous gifts for his pregnant wife, an island tradition. Each day he was gone, Lokokolok's wife sat oceanside to wait for her husband. And each day in the midst of the waiting, she chanted, Lokokolok, where is Lokokolok? Oh, I've been waiting so long. I sleep. Oh, you're not there. Oh, sail away, sail away. Set your sail for the oceanside. Each day as his wife's chant settled over the water, Lokokolok stopped at an island. He stopped at Namdreek looking for mats, at Malolalap to pick breadfruit. He sailed far north to the islands in Kabenmeto to find flowers only an Iraish could wear. On one small island, he found a koko, an animal able to imitate any noise, the sound of the wind, the sound of people, of chickens or canoes. And each day, their Iroish wife returned home without him. Loneliness became the pregnant woman's only companion. Weeks and months sailed by, separating her more and more from her husband and from her happiness. When Lokokolok finally returned to Ibon, he met only an empty, silent shore. No one's here. Lokokolok marveled aloud to his crew. The people of Ibon had always met his boat. As he stepped onto the shore, he told his men to wait in the canoe. Shadowed figures moved quickly beyond the trees from ocean to lagoon, from lagoon to ocean. It looked as if there were a lot of people running back and forth, back and forth. Why would they be running? Thought the Iroish. Unless they're trying to hide. He put the koko, that noise-making animal, on his shoulder and walked onto the island. It was very still, no people running, nothing The island appeared darker than Lokokolok remembered. His wife appeared right near where he had seen the shadows running. "Yakwe," she said quietly. "Yakwe," he answered. "Where is everyone?" "Oh," said his wife, "the people went oceanside to fish." "And you're here by yourself?" he asked. "Yes, I've been waiting for you." She moved deeper into the darkness between the trees. "Now we should join them. Come." Shadows play awful tricks, but to Lokokolok, his wife no longer looked pregnant. Where was the child? "You go first," he said. "No, you. I can't go before the Iroish," she said. Through the odd darkness of the way they walked, Lokokolok leading carefully through the brush, his wife moved with great speed and silence. A moment before she nearly ran him down, the animal Lokokolok was carrying brushed his shoulder. He turned. His wife's face hung just inches from his own. "If you're in a hurry, you can lead the way," Lokokolok said to her. "People will want to greet you after so long a time," she said. "Keep going." They started down the path again, his wife moving up quickly and quietly behind him. The Koko rubbed his shoulder again. He turned to see a bit of spittle hanging from his wife's mouth. Lokokolok knew the truth now and wished he hadn't stayed away so long. The old legend said, a lonely pregnant woman always turned into a demon. It must have happened to his wife. As they neared Oceanside, Lokokolok asked, "How come I can't hear anyone?" "They left already," she said gruffly. "They're getting ready to meet you. Stop talking. Let's go back." Lokokolok hesitated. "But wait, I have to pee behind this tree." "Be quick." Lokokolok stepped behind a canol tree. He put the kolkol on the ground and told it, "Make the sound of me." "Shh, shh, shh," muttered the koko. Lokokolok ran to the village. It lay silent and empty. "She's eaten them all," he cried. "What did she do to our child?" He picked up several core coconut shells with a hole in the middle. He tied one to a tree at one side of the island. He ran to the other side to do the same. "Shh," muttered the koko as the demon wife waited. He snapped off one prickly jub-jub, a magic thorn, and ran on to the end of the island where his crew waited in the canoe. The koko muttered. The demon wife grew impatient with waiting. "Are you still back there?" The koko muttered on and on. She looked behind the tree and growled when she saw the animal. She ate it and ran off calling, "Lokokolok! Hey, Lokokolok! Whoa!" A bird answered her call. "Ooh. Ooh," she ran to it, and angered by this second trick, she ate that bird in a single crunch. Lokokolok sailed off, leaving his demon wife on her lonely island crying, "Lokokolok! Lokokolok!" Another bird answered her call. "Ooh, ooh." And she leapt at that bird, tore it apart, and screamed her husband's name until it echoed off the ocean's waves. She stretched her neck up through the coconut trees, up to the clouds, looking across the Radak Island chain and then the Raylik chain. She couldn't see him anywhere. She looked south, then north, and saw that canoe heading to Namdrik. All the men cried out in fear when they saw the demon woman's head floating just below the clouds. Lokokolok chanted, "Fly, fly, high, high. Fly off to the sky. Oh." He threw the jubob, the magic thorn, as hard as he could into the air. And the floating head chased it up into the sky. And when her head sailed down again, screaming after the thorn, she was far from the island of Iba. She and her body got so very lost and confused, she disappeared forever.
Wowzy.
Scary, scary story.
Yes. It was very good. I liked it very much. I'm just checking the time here because I know you like to know the time.
It was
only 8 minutes and 25 seconds.
Yeah, that's about what I got, something like that. Maybe.
Yeah, cool. That was interesting. I should
say that that came from an edition at Parabola magazine. What's that word for the different? Every month you get a different one. What's that called? Issue.
A monthly issue. Yeah.
It only comes out 4 times a year. But Parabola Journal, the Journal of Myth, Tradition, and Search for Meaning. And that particular volume was from 1999, the winter of 1999, and it's called Evil. And there is this incredible picture
from
Star Wars.
Of what?
From Star Wars, one of the bad guys.
So do you have a subscription to that magazine?
Yes, I do.
Since 1999?
Oh, it's been published. It's much longer than that. So that was a story from the Marshall Islands.
Each
edition has a couple traditional stories.
Right. I was wondering, so do you have 23 years worth of those magazines?
I started getting that in the 80s. So I probably have 40 years. But there's only 4 a year.
But that's like 150 or more magazines. So
I have 2 shelves of them.
No wonder you know so many stories.
You should borrow some of them from me because they really are amazing stories.
Wow.
It's a very heavy, heavy journal. Deep thoughts, but they're also wonderful little stories. As well as commentary.
Yeah, I like wonderful stories. Deep thoughts are beyond me. I'm too old for deep thoughts.
Well, I fall down rabbit holes.
Yeah.
I was having trouble coming up with a question, with a story to complement your story that you told me you were going to tell. So I was very happy to go.
That is kind of freaky. It was sad too.
Yes, it is.
You know.
Well, your story, as I remember it, the story you're planning to tell today, is a little sad as well.
Well,
it's humorous, but it's also
yes. And I have a question: what kind of animal was the thing that made the sounds?
I have not. I think it's a traditional mythic animal from the Marshall Islands.
You didn't tell that to the kids yesterday, did you?
No, I did not.
I kept imagining. Young kids, especially slightly older than 2 years old, and then up to high school, thinking, whoa, that guy's got a real problem there.
And actually, in Parabola, they give credit to a teller named Nitwa Jaik, Nitwa first name, Jaik second name, as retold by Daniel Kalin, or Kellen, K-E-L-I-N. The second, Daniel Kellen, the second. So those are the original tellers of that tale.
Yeah. I admire the people who write the stories. I've written stories, but boy, it's not easy unless you get a spark someplace.
Well, after yesterday's telling and traveling to Baltimore in a long day, I didn't think I could come up with a story. And I could, and I hadn't, I'd been thinking about it, you know, since you told me what your story was
going to
be, and I hadn't come up with a complimentary tale. So I was very happy to find this one.
Well, that's good. I hope you didn't spend half the night in the garage paging through Parabola.
Nope. Parabola's in the parlor.
That's amazing. Parabola. That's an interesting thing because that's a math thing.
Uh-huh,
you know, parabola, right. Parabola is a math term. Mm-hmm. For,
And a geometry term too, right?
Some people consider geometry to be math.
Well, I think to me it's different because it's spatial. Really, they are divided in my head. I know that.
I have no doubt.
They're separate areas of my brain. Anything to do with space and spatial relationships require a lot of time and attention from me. Right. And so numbers I can do in my head, but space, I am continually going in circles. Probably heard me say that I get lost anytime I go somewhere new and I have to keep circling my target. That's what geometry is about.
Oh, okay. And I would call that geography. Well, and it's no surprise that we have different names for the same thing. And other people would look and say, those two are crazy. Or something, you know.
Or at least one of us is.
One half of that group there. Well, you've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour.
Fool that you are, yes.
With Stasia Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford
as your co-hosts. And I think it's time for another story, so I'm going to jump right in. My story will be a bit longer, I think. Oh, I know it will. So here we go. I'm guessing that you're ready for me to begin.
I am ready for you to begin.
Okay. This story has a title. It's called Wicked John. And it is based on a very old, old story about the devil and the smith, a blacksmith. And this version is from Appalachia. And it is a favorite tale in many parts of the Appalachian part of the country. So here goes. The Wicked John was called that by people because he was really not a very nice person. He was an excellent blacksmith. If you needed something prepared, something that had to be done by a smith, he was the person to take it to. He did excellent work. He was not a friendly person, but he did do excellent work. So people took their things to him to get fixed, or they ordered things from him. He built things for people, metal things. But he had this reputation for being grumpy and grouchy and not a pleasant person. One day, John was working at his forge, and all of a sudden, he noticed a man walking by the end of his path, had a long white robe on. And he was a very elderly person who was walking with a stick. And John put down what he was working on and walked outside and walked over to the person and said, "Hello, old guy, where are you going?" And he said, "I'm just walking. I'm doing my job. I'm looking for a certain kind of people." And John said, "Well, you look awfully tired. And have you come a long way?" And the man just nodded his head. So John uncharacteristically said, "Why don't you stop and have a meal with me? And you can rest." Well, the man smiled and thanked him, and so they went back into John's, where he did his smith work and also his attached house. And they had a very pleasant evening. John fixed a nice meal that they shared and convinced the old man that he should spend the night and rest before he goes on in his travels. The old man had a good night's rest. In the morning, he got up and he thanked John and he said, John, I'm on a special trip and I came from a special place. So I'm looking for people and you are one of the people I am so glad that I met. And I can grant you three wishes because you've been so kind to me. Well, John thought he was being silly. He never heard of anybody walking around giving out wishes, but the man was so serious that John said, okay, let me see. I know what. He said, see, that rocking chair. When people come and have things done here, sometimes they go and sit in that rocking chair. It's my favorite chair. And I'm trying to do my work, and they'll rock back and forth, and it just drives me crazy because I don't think it's really nice of them to do that, while I'm doing the work. They should just go home and then come back when it's ready. But he said, so how about my first wish is that anyone who sits in that rocking chair, especially if I ask them to, if they would like to sit in there, they'll be stuck in it. They will not be able to get out unless I tell the chair to let them go. And the man looked at John and said, that's a strange wish. He said, well, that's what I want. And okay, and what's your second wish? And says second wish. John just looked around and he saw his favorite hammer. Very nice hammer, strong. And he said, see this hammer? Sometimes people come by and if I'm not paying attention, they'll pick up this hammer because they want to use it for something, or they'll just pick it up because they think it's interesting and they'll hit things with it. And I've had to repair this hammer. I've had to work on it, with the fire and everything and make sure it's better. And he said, so anyone who picks up this hammer cannot let it go. That's my second wish, until I say, it's okay. The man just shook his head. He said, John, that's a really strange wish also. He said, you should think about your third wish. And John had a smile on his face. And the old man said, oh, okay, so what's your third wish? And John said, let me show you this bush right outside the door here. This beautiful rose bush has lots of thorns on it and everything. He said, people come by here and steal my roses. And he said, they don't even ask. He said, if they ask, I might say, go ahead. Well, I probably wouldn't say, go ahead and take one, but they should at least ask, and they don't. So how about if anybody touches this rose bush without my permission, the bush will hang on to them and they'll get stuck with the thorns. And the old man just shook his head and said, okay, John, that's the three strangest wishes I've ever given, but thanks for your hospitality and your kindness. And he started to walk down the path. John barely blinked and turned a little bit to the side. When he looked back at the path, the man was gone. He just went on with his day. Well, as time went on, John didn't improve his behavior any. In fact, he was worse than ever. And he had such a terrible reputation. And as things went on, and as time does, finally, John got to where it was time for him to die. And he decided that he should find a place to spend eternity, because he believed that was what you were supposed to do. Off he went to heaven. And as he approached the pearly gates, he recognized the person standing at the gate. It was the old man. And John went up and said, "Hi, you remember me?" And St. Peter, for that's who it was, said, "Of course I remember you, John. You were very kind to me." And John said, "Well, I died and I have to have a place to spend eternity. And I thought, what better place than heaven?" And St. Peter said, "Well, John, we have to check the book. You know, you don't just get to go to heaven automatically. We'll have to see what your life has been like." So St. Peter turned and reached underneath the little shelf he had there, pulled out this book, turned the pages, and he said, "Here, John, here's a page that reflects what you did with me when I visited you years ago." And he said, "You were very kind to me." And John looked, he said, "There's not much on that page." He said, no, "That's true. There's only this one entry. And so let's look at the other pages." And he turned the other pages. He went through three or four other pages. And John said, "Well, there's a lot of stuff written there. What's that for?" He said, "Well, John, that's all about how you've treated people all your life." And he said, "Unfortunately, all this information on these pages tell me that you're not going to be allowed into heaven, John. You're going to have to find another place." Well, John just turned on his heel and walked away. He eventually found his way down to Hades. And on his way, he was reflecting that he had encountered things from Hades in his life that he hadn't thought about for a long time. But he smiled as he was on his trip because he remembered the three wishes that it turned out that St. Peter had given him. And those three wishes had given him some pleasure. So as he was on his way down to Hades, he was thinking about the first time he met a devil. A real devil was a little tiny devil. It seemed to be just about the size of a five-year-old who knocked on his door frame and said, "Wicked John, my father sent me to get you." John looked and said, "What?" Said, "My father has heard that you have become the meanest, most rotten person on earth. And he doesn't like that because he thinks your reputation is getting to be worse than his. And he said, I should bring you down to him." And John looked around and said, "Well, I'm in the middle of something. How about you sit down, sit over on my rocking chair for a little while, not while I finish, and then we'll go." Well, the little devil jumped up on a rocking chair and began to rock. And he rocked and he rocked and rocked. And John just kept on working. And the chair got to be a little bit aggressive in its rocking. And the little devil wasn't controlling it at all. The rocking chair just kept going back and forth, back and forth. Eventually, the devil's head started banging on the back of the rocking chair. And he started to yell, "Hey, tell this chair to stop. Come help me get this." And John just laughed. And finally, John said, "I'll tell you what, I'll tell that chair to let you go if you just get out of here and never come back." And the little devil said, of course, let me go. John said, "Okay, chair, let him go." And the chair came forward a bit. The little devil jumped off the chair, ran out the door, screaming and hollering. Anyway, John had a good laugh at that. He thought, that was funny. I didn't think those wishes were going to work. But anyway, he went on. A few days later, there was a knock on his door frame again. John looked up, and here was a teenage devil. He said, "John, my father sent me to get you." And John said, "Well, I'm in the middle of doing something here." He said, "I just got a couple things to do before I'm finished this job. Hand me that hammer, will you? It's sitting right there." And the teenage devil reached down, grabbed that hammer by the handle, and went to him, to John, and John said, "Well," looked at him, and his arm started to move up and down. That hammer, he tried to drop it, but he couldn't get rid of it. And that hammer started to move up and down with his arm and beat on things and beat on the floor and then beat on a bunch of wood and then on a rock. And he kept it up. And the teenage devil's arm was getting exhausted. And he said, tell it stop. Make this hammer stop. And John laughed and said, I'll tell it to stop if you let it go and get out of here and never come back again. All right, yeah, right. The hammer fell out of his hand. He ran out the door. I got to tell my father. John was laughing, having a good time. Well, in no time at all, a matter of maybe 2 days, old Scratch himself was at the doorway. Knocked on the door and said, John, I've come to get you. John looked up and said, what? Said, you know who I am, don't you, John? He said, yeah, I recognize you. Just a minute. And he put down the tools he was working with, and the devil was just looking around. And all of a sudden, John rushed right at the devil at the doorway, tackled him, and they fell into the rose bush. And John rolled away, and the rose bush engulfed the devil. And the devil was being struck by thorns, and he'd never experienced anything like this. That bush would not let him go. And he was screaming and hollering. John was on the ground laughing and having such a good time. And the devil finally said, tell it to let me go. Tell it to let me go. And John said, I will, but only if you promise you'll never come bother me again. The devil said, I don't care about you. I have other people to worry about. Just please tell her to let me go. And John said, okay, bush, let him go. And the devil rolled out of the bush, got up, and ran down the road, muttering to himself. He was probably cursing and stuff, but John could care less because he was laughing. Well, John had such fun thinking about those adventures. And all of a sudden, there he was, down at the gate of Hades. And he put his hands on the gate and rattled it a little bit, made a noise, and here came, oh, there was that little devil. And that little devil said, oh, no, it's you. And he ran away. And John rattled the gate some more. The teenage devil said, what do you want? He said, I need a place to stay for eternity. I figured this is a good place. They wouldn't let me in that other one. And the teenage devil ran away. Here came the real old Scratch himself. John, what do you want here? I need a place to stay. They wouldn't let me in upstairs. So I figured this is the one I should come to. And the devil said, just a minute, John. Turned around, he picked up a kind of a small bowl of some kind. Reached with a pair of tongs into the fires of hell and grabbed a hot coal, put it in that bowl. And the flames were just creeping around that hot coal. He said, here, John, this is something I'm going to give you. It's a gift. And he handed him the bowl and that hot coal with a flame on it through the gate. John said, what's sore? He said, well, you can't come in here, John. This is not a good place for you. We don't like people like you in here. So you go and find yourself your own place to stay for eternity. And off John went. And the people in some parts of Appalachia will tell you that if you go out in the evening, some men go down in the bayou and in different places, and they're on their canoe. They might be fishing or they go hunting. And they look into the woods. And they'll see a kind of flame moving through the trees. Don't see anybody with it, just the flame. And they, people say, over the years, they figured out that they know what that is. That's Wicked John carrying that hot coal from hell and looking for a place to stay for eternity.
That is a great story. My goodness. I love it every time you tell it. But I always get a little sad at the end. I feel a little sorry for Wicked John.
That's good. Well, that's good. So I'm glad you enjoy that. I do like telling that story. It's one of my, it is one of my favorites.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to tell you, when you, when I was looking around for stories, thinking about what I wanted to tell, I wanted to review the story, your story, so I would remember all the nuances, so I would be able to choose a compatible complementary story. And I found the, a children's book called Wicked John by Richard Thomas Chase. And he published that book back in 1950 or 51, something like that.
Yeah.
Did you know that that story, that book was also banned in New York State for a while?
I didn't.
A clergyman's wife was horrified by that, that it was in their school library because, and she called the Board of Education complaining about that book, saying that it made blasphemous reference and to heaven and hell, that the, it was disrespectful and missing the whole point.
Where did you get that information?
I looked up Richard Thomas Chase's biography, and that was one of the points in it. But in the process of doing that, when I tried to look up Richard Thomas Chase, I actually just typed in Richard Chase, and what came up was the a man known as the vampire murderer or the vampire killer. He's also called the cannibal killer. In from Sacramento, California, he murdered six people and became a habitual drinker of blood. Wow. So as long as we're talking about scary stories, I thought you would appreciate that one.
And yeah, I have two books by Mr. Chase.
Yeah, he documented a lot of Appalachian stories. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of the Jack Tales and and others.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So the other guy is Richard Trenton Chase.
Oh.
And he was eventually imprisoned and was condemned to die, and he committed suicide in San Quentin in California.
It seems strange that people will do that.
Would eat other people?
No, would commit suicide. And I always think it's strange. They, in those cases, he's condemned to death. So instead, he's going to have his own way. He's not going to get. And I always think they don't think it out very clearly. If they really want to irritate the people who are going to, execute them, why do they do it so that they don't see it or don't hear it or don't know anything about it until they find a body? Is this just my way of thinking?
Well, there was quite a bit detailed in this report about the guy's mental health history.
Yeah.
So he was an interesting person, let's say, and I'm glad both of us were around at that point. This is the 70s.
Yeah.
And he wasn't imprisoned until 1980, but I don't remember any of that. Of course, we're not in California, so maybe the coverage wasn't that great, but. That kind of rattled me because I was looking for Richard Thomas Chase, looking forward to hearing funny horror stories, and that was not so funny.
I was going to say there was a person I admired. I really didn't admire it. I just thought it was interesting that there was a man, a politician, about in the last, I would say, 10, 12 years, sometime, maybe 10, 12 years ago, sometime in the last 12 years, maybe even 15 years. And there was, for a while, there was a short clip on TV because he was in a lot of trouble and he knew he was probably going to go to jail And he was a middle-aged man, or maybe a little bit more than middle-aged. And so he came into this meeting, and he walked behind this desk, and he started to say a couple things, and people wondered what he was even doing there. And he said, "I decided to do this my way." Reached up with a gun, put it to his head, and blew his brains out. And that was done in right in front of this meeting. And there was a video of it. Of course, the video stopped when the gun got to his head. I'm sure it continued, but they didn't show that part. And he had left a note that said he was going to make his own way out. And I thought, whoa, there's a guy who just didn't quit being, you know, a bad person. Right. He was going to go out the way he wanted, no matter what, which, you know.
And, on that note.
That's it's always dangerous to do that. I had a friend, very good friend, lost. I don't even know if he's still alive, but he was the sort of depressed, took a pistol, put it to the back of his head and fired it and didn't kill himself. Became a paraplegic. One side of his body was damaged. He could not control one side of his body by himself. Had to wind up in a wheelchair, and then eventually got to be where he could walk with a cane. They had some of the doctors fix, but he, you know, just because he wanted to stop feeling depressed, and he missed.
No idea that we were going to have such a gruesome show today, but I should have known when I thought about the stories. By my clock, we're out of time.
Yeah, I have 56 minutes. So as John said, we should end the show and not worry about it. And there's going to be jazz playing at some time.
Blues.
No, jazzy blues, maybe. Or bluesy jazz. And sometimes, okay. Anyway, please take us
out. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stacy Okowski.
Your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio. Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, an internet station. And that's the end of this week's show. This Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. And as Stosh says, stay tuned for Jazzy Blues.
There you go. Thanks a lot. Hopefully we'll talk to you this Thursday. And we can still talk a minute. At the end of June, Terry and I are going to be going up to Massachusetts to see my daughter and my granddaughter, Megan and Zia, who we haven't seen for a few years. And we're going to go up there for a couple of days and spend some time with Zia. And I'm hoping that I will have a story finished by then, because I've started working on a story about the lake which they live next to. It's a small lake. They built Megan and her husband built that house right at the lake. I started on a story about Zia and my grandson, John, who is the same age as Zia, this difference by 6 weeks, and a dragon that lives in the lake, and no one can see the dragon except these two children. So
sounds like a winner.
I hope it is, because I'm going to try to finish that in the next couple of weeks, and also try to do some panels, you know, the picture panels, so that the kids can draw. I'll draw the basics, and the kids can do what they want with them. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a nice trip.
I'll talk to you on Thursday.
We will try. If one of us can remember, or both, or actually both of us, because we both been guilty of, oh, look at that, it's 11:30 and I was supposed to call Fanny.
Okay, so that will be June 9th. No, that will be
June 2nd.
No,
can't be June 2nd.
It can't be?
Oh, what? Oh, on Thursday. I was thinking of next Monday. Yes, no. You're right.
Okay.
Yes, because the first will be on Wednesday and the second will be on Thursday.
All right. It's on the calendar.
All right.
Have a good week.
You too. I'm looking forward to it. I'm in search of a special device for my... actually, I've ordered a megaphone.
Right.
From the internet. But I'm afraid it's not going to be here on the day I need it. I really wanted a megaphone for June 7th because I'm going to do a short thing. And it probably won't be here until the 7th. So that's going to be a problem. So, and I ordered it because I was having such trouble building a megaphone.
Right.
It's easy to make a small megaphone. But in order to make a big megaphone and do it well, you need a large, large piece of paper. Not just a big piece of poster board. You need a large piece of paper.
How big a piece do you need?
Oh, big. Big enough so that one size, so that you can get, so you can make a megaphone that's, if you want to make a megaphone that's 30 inches tall, which is generally the size of the old time cheerleader megaphone, and well, even the modern cheerleader megaphones, and, so the paper has to be really big. And to get poster board that is all in one piece that's 5 feet wide or something like that is difficult. They don't make things that way easily. And so I'm working on a plan in case I have to make one in the next week so I can do it. Because I'm going to be doing a thing about sound.
And well, I don't know where you can get poster board that big, but I know where you can get heavy paper that big. Would that help?
Well, I think I'm just going to muddle through with what I have. I have some poster board that I could tape together and then do it because I only need it for a short period.
Right.
So
okay.
I'm going to try this. If not, then I'll call you back and figure out
what. Does it need to be square? 5 feet?
Oh, no.
5 feet square?
No.
Okay.
So. All right. Take care. Talk to you Thursday. All right. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Did you hear our very, very scary stories?
No.
Our horrific stories. That's good. I'm glad.
Okay. Be good.
All right.
Bye.